The Origin of Race and Civilization by Charles Weissman. Read for you by Paul Maitrigine. This is a free TearingDownIdols.com audiobook. Reproduction and redistribution are encouraged. For more free reading and listening material, please visit TearingDownIdols.com. Chapter 2. The Antiquity of Man. The debate over the origin of races is bound up with the wider problem of the origin and antiquity of man. To find the true origin of the races, it will be necessary to make a brief excursion into the depths of history, following the trail of evidence that has been revealed by archaeology, paleontology, and anthropology. The subject of the antiquity of man has proven to be even more controversial and hotly debated than the antiquity of the earth or universe. Ever since the fossil remains of primitive type men such as Neanderthal were discovered, theologians have been confronted with the problem of explaining the findings of science in light of traditional beliefs of the Bible. The traditional biblical belief holds that all men came from Adam only 6,000 years ago. Fossil men. Paleontologists and anthropologists have unearthed evidence indicating that tens of thousands of years ago there were people living on the earth. This agrees with other evidence that many living things existed prior to the time of Adam, as was suggested by Blumenbach in 1776. Putting all these things together, in my opinion, it becomes more than merely probable that not only one or more species, but a whole organized pre-Adamite creation has disappeared from the face of our planet. Footnote, J.F. Blumenbach, On the Natural Varieties of Mankind, page 285, end footnote. It was not until 1856 when part of a fossil skeleton was found in Neander Valley, near Dusseldorf, Germany, that any evidence existed to indicate that the human form was a part of this extinct pre-Adamite creation. This species of man was called Neanderthal. Evidence of its past existence has been verified by artifacts and skeletal remains in much of Europe, Asia, Northern Africa, and the Middle East. Professor Kuhn provides the following description of the typical Neanderthal man. Neanderthals were short, stocky people with long bodies and short arms and legs. The lower half of the leg and corresponding part of the arm were particularly short. The great toe was shorter than the other toes. If a competent anatomist sees a single bone of Neanderthal lying on the table, he can usually recognize it at once as different from the corresponding bone of modern man. Neanderthal bones are thicker, heavier, and denser, with narrower marrow cavities and with less pronounced ridges for muscle attachment. Neanderthal failed to stand completely erect. While the brain of the Neanderthal man was as large as our own, it was shaped differently, being excessively long, wide, and flat. Neanderthal's face is equally distinctive. Huge, cipher-shaped orbits spaced far apart, a long, highly arched broad nose, and a narrowing, protruding muzzle make his whole face appear to spring forward. Footnote: Carlton Kuhn, The Story of Man, 1954, page 34. End footnote. Some other distinctive features of Neanderthals were a sloping forehead, heavy brow ridges, wide jaw, and extremely short necks. They thus were obviously quite different and distinct from any types of man now living. The Neanderthals, which had appeared about 100,000 years ago, became extinct about 45,000 years ago. Evidence of other types of pre-Adamic men were revealed by the discovery of remnants of the bones of such ancient people in a grotto near the village of Cro-Magnon, France, in 1868. Since then, similar remains have been found in other places in Europe and also in Africa, Asia, and Australia. People of this type, whose remains date back to about 40,000 years, are called Cro-Magnon men. Their remains reveal a type of people that are rather similar to some of the primitive races of today, as Dr. Topinard shows. Cro-Magnon skulls of the Stone Period are elongated from backwards, while the face is contracted from above downwards, as it is in the Tasmanian skull. In other skulls, the prognathism at the subnasal portion in some Cro-Magnon is as much as in the Negro. Footnote. P. Topinard, Anthropology, 1878, pages 213 and 439. End footnote. The skulls from various locations seem to vary in type, as do those of the varied races today. Thus, many races living today are descended from these Cro-Magnon people. The Cro-Magnon people of the late Paleolithic period, 40,000 to 20,000 BC, had developed many finely made advanced tools, weapons, and other implements from stone and bone. But Cro-Magnon man is best known for his impressive artistic ability. There are over 100 sites in France and Spain alone of Cro-Magnon man's magnificently beautiful cave paintings, many done in various colors. All of these artifacts and paintings verify the existence and antiquity of these people. While religious fundamentalists could twist the facts of antiquity and thus pass off the Cro-Magnon or even the Neanderthal types as being a, quote, descendant of Adam and Eve, end quote, that argument disintegrated with the skeletal remains found in Java in 1891 and 1892. Here was a type that had ape-like features and was clearly not like any living races of man. This unique specimen was called Pithecanthropus erectus by its discoverer, Dr. Dubois. From the several skeletons now discovered, Professor Howell has given this description of Pithecanthropus species. This primitive species of man was the same size as the modern one. That is shown by the leg bone, which indicates a height of 5 feet 6 inches or more. It is human in every way, as to its straightness and the forms of its joints. It also shows that Pithecanthropus walked erect. The head was carried in a rather primitive and forward position. His head was tremendously thick and heavy. The forehead is so low that it cannot be said to exist, and the profile is strongly ape-like. His teeth were large, his dental arch was long and narrow, and his jaw was heavy and chinless. Ape-like features all. Together, the jaws, like the skull, are those of a being standing midway between man and ape. Footnote. William Howell, Mankind So Far, 1944, page 137 through 140. End footnote. Other primitive fossil men discovered which are similar to the erectus species include the skulls found near Peking, China. The Peking man, which used to be called Sinanthropus, has some characteristics that are more primitive than the Java man, while some are more modern. These so-called ape men had come into existence around 800,000 years ago and became extinct about 300,000 years ago. Many other primitive types of this era have also been discovered, including Heidelberg man in Germany. An older and somewhat more primitive skeleton called Habilis man is dated at 1.75 million years old. This being had a smaller brain than Pithecanthropus, 700 to 800 cubic centimeters, had larger teeth, and slightly smaller stature, yet its general appearance was similar. The paleontologists of the 20th century have been able to unearth an even more primitive species than the Pithecanthropus type, that being the Australopithecines. One of the better known is Australopithecus africanus. They lived in Africa between 1 and 4 million years ago and were the epitome of the term ape man. They were less than 5 feet tall and walked erect, but not nearly as well as modern man. Australopithecines have been described as a man-ape or ape-man because of its man-like body but ape-like head. Other discoveries of the 20th century along these lines have been the discovery of Rhodesian man from Africa, which is more modern in appearance than Pithecanthropus, but somewhat more primitive than Neanderthal. This specimen was large, heavy-boned, about 5 feet 10 inches tall, huge eyebrow ridges, large square-rimmed eye sockets, had a long upper jaw and flattish nose which gave this man a peculiar brutal, though essentially human, appearance. Footnote. Carlton Kuhn, Story of Man, page 32. End footnote. Another discovery from Africa has been that of Ramapithecus. This is the oldest of any creature which still has some human characteristics, namely, the ability to walk upright. Aside from that, it was much like an ape. Classifications and origins. In the taxonomical system, all such creatures as previously mentioned are classified under the family category Hominidae, which actually means man-like, just as the family category Canidae means dog-like. The main criteria for belonging to the family Hominidae is being bipedal, or having the ability to walk upright on 2 feet. Members of this group are sometimes called hominids. Under the Hominidae family head, there are various genus categories. The Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal people, as well as the living races of man, are of the genus Homo. Thus, Homo Neanderthalensis is the scientific or taxonomic name for Neanderthal man. Likewise, Pithecanthropus erectus is the name of the Java man, its genus being Pithecanthropus and its species being erectus. The Peking man can also be classified under the Pithecanthropus genus, as indicated by Professor Howells. Peking man would doubtless today be named Pithecanthropus pekinensis by sticklers for correctness, putting him in a genus together with the Java man, though as a different species, pekinensis. This has been suggested by several people. Footnote, William Howells, Mankind So Far, page 146. End footnote. It is interesting to note that modern-day evolutionists have classified the Java and Peking man, as well as Habilis, under the genus Homo. Thus, one may encounter the name Homo erectus. This was a totally unwarranted and obviously erroneous classification. The only reason for doing this was to lend credibility to their evolutionary concept. By placing these ape men under the genus Homo, it helped to narrow the gaps which the evolutionary theory is plagued with. Also, by placing such dissimilar types in the same genus with modern man, it has helped to justify classifying the living races as one species. One evolutionist involved in such classifications admits that they are rather arbitrary. There is no hard and fast rule engraved on mosaic tablet which states, above this line is man, below it is non-man. Each decision of classification has a very large arbitrary element to it. Footnote, J.R. Napier, The Roots of Mankind, 1970, page 141, end footnote. Evolutionists have deliberately broken the rules of taxonomy by incorrectly classifying or reclassifying fossil men in order to make their theory appear more plausible. Each new discovery of the hominid type has failed to support the evolution theory, but rather weakens and disproves it by raising more problems and questions than are ever answered. The fossil record now shows that around 40,000 years ago, with the start of the Cro-Magnon period, modern human types suddenly appeared in various locations throughout the world. No one can explain this. The fossil record provides evidence of sharp and distinct steps in the appearance and distinction of different types, which is atypical of evolution. As Professor Howells stated, evolution does not proceed by neat steps. Footnote, William Howells, Mankind So Far, page 221. End footnote. Only a creation process could possibly explain the sudden appearance of the modern types. Evolutionists have no explanation for it in their theory. If we look at a typical evolutionary family tree, as conceived by evolutionists, we find many dead ends in the evolution pattern. All agree that Neanderthal was a dead end, meaning it did not evolve into Cro-Magnon people. There is a void of nearly 250,000 years until Pithecanthropus. No sound explanation exists for this lack of transitory types prior to the Cro-Magnon people that could be used to explain their sudden emergence. Evolution cannot explain the origin of the races of man, as pointed out by Professor Keith. When we ask how these three types, European, Chinaman, and Negro, came by their distinctive features, we find that our evolutionary machine is defective. The processes of natural and of sexual selection will preserve and exaggerate traits of body and of mind, but they cannot produce that complex of features which marks off one racial type from another. Footnote. A. Keith, The Differentiation of Mankind into Racial Types, page 444. End footnote. Thus, the fossil evidence has been as much a blessing as a curse to the evolution theory, just as Darwin predicted. Pre-Adamic Races. It has been well demonstrated that both Cro-Magnon people as well as the Neanderthal types contained varied racial types. Some of the Cro-Magnon races survived to the present day, while others became extinct. There was also another sudden appearance or creation of types of man in the Neolithic period, 10,000 to 8,000 BC. These skulls appear more typical of the more advanced races, such as Egyptian and Arabic types, whereas the earlier Cro-Magnon skulls are more typical of the more primitive races, such as the Negro, Australian, and Oriental types. It is generally accepted that certain races are older than others. The Negro types and Australian Aborigines are recognized as existing back to 40,000 years, the Oriental for about 25,000, the American Indian and Polynesian for 15,000, and some of the Arabic types for about 10,000 years. Thus, God's creative pattern seems to prevail within the living races, as it does within the fossil record as a whole. That pattern being the creation of the more primitive types first, such as Pithecanthropus before Neanderthal, or in the case of the living races, the Australian and Negro being created before the Caucasian. Most anthropologists agree that the living races of man each have a long separate history, and that there is no evidence or a recent common origin, as most churches teach. In speaking on racial origins, Professor Kuhn states that all the evidence available from comparative ethnology, linguistics, and prehistoric archaeology indicates a long separation of the principal races of man. To derive an Australian Aborigine or a Congo pygmy from European ancestors of modern type would be biologically impossible. Footnote, Carlton Kuhn, The Origin of Races, 1962, page 5. End footnote. Likewise, Professor Howells states that the great familiar racial stocks, the white, yellow, and black, obviously represent an ancient separation. Footnote, William Howells, Mankind So Far, 1944, page 221. End footnote. The prehistoric hominids previously mentioned stand as further evidence of distinct racial origins. Their antiquity and dissimilar forms and characteristics proves that God did not create one generalized kind from which all races are derived, as claimed by creationists regarding Adam. Neanderthals were a distinct creation, as were Hottentots and Eskimos. Even if people want to deny the pre-Adamic antiquity of primitive hominids, their existence and their ape-like characteristics cannot be denied. Their skeletal remains stand as prima facie evidence that they once were living things just as dinosaurs, trilobites, or any other extinct form of life. Skeletal remains show that these primitive men were unlike anything living today, and thus there should be no qualms in at least saying they were non-Adamic. Yet theologians and the church world choose to deny their existence because they think that God would never create such things. If these people had never seen any race but their own, they would no doubt deny evidence of pygmies or Hottentots, stating that God would never make such people. This is not reason, but the human heart speaking. It is strange that people have no difficulty believing that some monstrous dinosaur existed, which became extinct 65 million years ago, but totally refuse to believe that an ape-like man existed and became extinct only 300,000 years ago. The strange and the unfamiliar are often rejected and disbelieved. For instance, when the early explorers of Australia brought back reports of the strange and unusual life forms that existed in the land, their claims were rejected by all. Even after a duck-billed platypus was brought back, it was dismissed as a hoax, as being merely parts of other animals sewn together. The existence of fossils and dinosaurs was rejected at first, but now no one denies their existence. It took a considerable time for Christendom to acknowledge the fact that God does allow his creations to fall into extinction. No one can deny this, for extinction is an observable process. The evidence that primitive ape men existed is becoming as great as evidence of dinosaurs or of the extinction process itself. Yet the churches and theologians refuse to recognize the obvious. Why? They will accept the existence of dinosaurs and extinct fossils because they do not really endanger their unity or brotherhood of man doctrine, which falsely asserts that the races have a common origin and thus are equal. The great bulk of the Judeo-Christian preaching is based on this doctrine. But if ape men or pre-Adamic races existed, they suddenly would not have a leg to stand on. Once Christians come to realize that these primitive ape men did indeed exist, and at a time prior to Adam, then a radical change will come about in understanding the works and word of God. The false Judeo-Christian concepts will disintegrate if such facts became generally accepted. Thus, the preachers and theologians will do anything, including distorting scientific facts or creating non-biblical stories, so as to hide or explain away those facts in order to preserve their cash flow generated from the false unity of races and brotherhood of man doctrines. The same preachers and theologians who claim that God works in mysterious ways also claim that God would never create primitive subhuman ape men. Christians need to quit listening to preachers who fashion God into their mold of what they believe God should be. Instead, they should go by what the Word and works of God reveal about the author. By studying the works of God, which includes all of his creation, we can better understand and appreciate the Word of God. The fossil record is simply a record of God's past creations or works.